Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live tonight. This is June the 6th in the year 2014. And we were just saying how where we are, it's just not been nothing but rain, like the whole skies have opened up and just pours, and we have been having rain every single day. And where the producer of the show lives, it's over 100.
And no rain.
No rain at all, so he would like to trade with us. So the whole United States has got different. We have a guest tonight, it's Sherry O'Brien. Sherry, where are you located?
I'm in Indiana, but I just came back from that 100-degree weather from Arizona, and it was still 100 and 110 when I left.
Oh, yeah, Arizona is always known for that. Phoenix,
yep.
Around in that area. So it's a difference, you know. Oh, well, but here, by next month, we'll all be complaining. I guess we'll be in summer. Okay. Well, our guest is Sherry O'Brien, and she is one of our authors, our new authors, and we've just published her book called Peaks and Valleys. And so we're going to have her talk about her book tonight. But let me give out the toll-free number first in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions. And we would really like for you to ask questions just of the guests instead of the two of us, Julia and me. So stick with the subject of the guest. So the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. If you want to call in and ask questions about Sherry. And we're getting ready for our transformation conference. This is the 9th year, and that's just in another couple of weeks.
2 weeks from today. Yeah, 2 weeks from today. I'm not thinking about it, apparently.
Well, you've been in England, too, you know. But it's June the 20th to the 22nd. This is our 9th transformation conference, and it's the conference that is really geared toward our authors for our company, but we always have some keynote speakers, too. So they're going to be, it's going to be happening very soon. And Sherry is one of our speakers.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Sherry. Well, I want to talk about your book, The Peaks and the Valleys.
Sure.
This is an interesting title. And it does deal with grief and recovering from loss.
Yes.
But before we get into that, I want you to tell everybody about yourself. I always like to start that way. You know,
sure.
About your background and how you got into the subject that you wrote about.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I am a licensed clinical social worker by profession, and I'm a psychotherapist, and I have been working for several years in a place called the Cancer Support Community here in Indiana. And have walked the journey a lot with the cancer patients themselves and death and dying, and do a bereavement group as well at the facility. And I just started recognizing my training had not prepared me for actually working with people that were mourning the loss of a loved one. And then when my family, and I started looking around for other information and educational materials to help myself be, more helpful to others who had lost someone they loved. And I started noticing in my own practice people were coming in with various losses, anything from loss of a loved one to loss of a job to loss of a relationship, and many other types of losses. But when my family incurred a loss, my nephew died at 21. It's been about 5.5 years ago now of bladder cancer, and I wasn't prepared to help my sister with this. It's a whole different experience when it happens to a loved one, but not only could I not prepare my sister or help her through it at this point, I wasn't able to help myself. And I started looking into a variety of different techniques that I already did for other things, and I started using the energy psychology and some of the energy medicine and other modalities that I use in my private practice with other types of issues, and I recognized that that was missing in the general public and as far as any type of bereavement information that's out there. They just didn't have a whole lot of information to help people get through the what's called a somatic or physical relief and release of the energy, because we carry that around with us. Most people would understand that when they think about how their heart broken by a loss. People can understand that, but we carry it in a variety of different ways. So I started using that on myself and helping my sister with that. And then I lost my brother. He had, about 6 months later after I lost my nephew, my brother unfortunately took his own life. And that was a whole different type of grief. And so I just started expanding and assisting myself and my family, and then, clients would come to me with these issues and workshops that I would do, and people would always ask me, do you have a book? And I'd say, well, no, not really, and I got pushed into it. It was one of those things. I was divinely pushed into writing a book about it.
Yeah, I love it when that happens.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I listen after a couple kicks. I listened and I decided I really did need to because I knew it wasn't out there. There were not a lot of exercises and techniques that people could use. There's a lot of bereavement books out there and grief and loss books, but there were not a lot that had techniques to help people release it at a cellular level. And so that's kind of how the whole book came to be and how I got into specializing in recovering from grief and loss and helping people to do so as well.
So originally you were just mostly helping those who were dying, how to get through the dying process. And
that was one of the things. Yeah, that was one of the things. And then the bereavement piece of it, I was also working, I do a bereavement group. And then I had a private practice where I was using these modalities with others to help them achieve certain, goals. There would be sabotaging beliefs, and from a Chinese perspective, there would be blocks in the meridians, and that would interfere with their ability to change certain behaviors because the core beliefs were behind those behaviors. So in the private practice piece of it, I was specializing in energy psychology and energy medicine. But at that time, I wasn't really specializing in helping people recover from loss within it. But interestingly enough, what I started noticing, and this always happens, the universe always, once we kind of set our mind and our intention to help others, I started getting more and more people coming in with various losses. And what I found was people were coming in with not only loss of a relationship or a job, but also kind of like their beliefs and meaning in life was occurring, and they were at having an identity crisis, if you will. And then, interestingly enough, I do hypnotherapy too, Dolores, and I was doing some hypnotherapy, and people were going into what I call divine homesickness. We were finding ancestral linkages with their loss, and so I began specializing in helping people release it at several different levels. So not just not that I mean to minimize in any way, but loss is pervasive in a lot of different areas of our life, secondary losses as well, and people don't recognize it as that, so they don't grieve it. Or they have a loss like this divine homesickness or ancestral grief, and they can't understand it because they may not have, in the present day, lost what they consider lost anything. So it's an interesting process.
A lot of them just think, well, I can handle it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm strong, no problems. And then when it really hits, you know, they bury it. That's the problem. Then it causes even more problems if they don't have it right away.
Absolutely. It accumulates, and anything that resonates with the same experience or emotion will bring that up in their energy pattern, and it may feel out of disproportion to what it is they're actually experiencing, and they have no idea why. And that's usually when we track it back down to a variety of different things. I mean, again, it can be an actual loss that they've experienced in the present day, but because they suppressed or were not ancestral-wise, and what I mean by that is there's a couple different levels of that. I mean, they can come in with past life issues that they were not able to release the grief from, or they can literally, there's a genetic component where now research is even showing there's something called epigenetics. It's wonderful. Bruce Lipton talks about it in his books, The Power of Belief, I think is what his title is. But anyway, it's literally they will come in, the male sperm can bring in this genetic pattern of loss or trauma or something that was unresolved from an ancestor. And so it's been very interesting working with that in some of the techniques that I do, and watching, you can just sometimes see it immediately, the transition in the energy and the person's facial expressions will change, and their body posturing will change once we release it at a cellular level.
That's really different, because I just know, like, my background, and I know what the teaching is out there. I don't know how much, you know, this really is groundbreaking to get it to this level. Like you said, to have the release, because we were just taught, you know, the nursing, and I wouldn't have gone into it as much as you would have. You know, you just don't even deal with loss on that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the fact that you're, you know, calling, and all we were taught to do was just grief over death, you know,
yeah.
And I like that you've even pulled it out, and it's like, you know, because you have loss from so many other things. I mean, you know, your job, your loved ones, a broken heart, a dream, you know.
Yes.
It could be, it could go to so many, you know, a lifestyle you thought you were going to have, and your life changes, and so you grieve,
mm-hmm.
you know, all these things that
yeah.
we don't.
And I noticed with the cancer patients that I were working with, too, and it was another kind of aha moment, if you will. People would come in with, I mean, you know, especially I remember this one guy in particular. He had been diagnosed with breast cancer. So that in and of itself was an identity issue for him.
Uh-huh.
Here he was, this big male, and he's identified, you know, with, or excuse me, diagnosed with breast cancer, and that's identified with a female cancer. So he was already having issues with that. And then when he had to have a mastectomy and he had to have all this treatment, he became weaker and weaker, and he loved target shooting. He loved shooting his guns, and he the target practice was one of the ways that he released stress, and he loved riding his sickle, and there was a point at which he couldn't do any of that. So his mobility and abilities to do the things he enjoyed, he could no longer do, and he was grieving that. And, you know, a lot of the cancer patients lose abilities and sometimes
uh-huh.
mobility, and they are grieving. Not
right.
necessarily the same as an anticipatory grief of their own death or leaving a loved one, but losing the ability to do something they've enjoyed doing.
Yeah, for their life.
Right.
Yes.
What they were used to doing. And
right.
Yes. Absolutely.
And they want their lifestyle back.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah, dreams, and fortunately, sometimes their job, and sometimes, ultimately, their home and lifestyle was impacted. So there's
yeah,
so many different secondary losses.
Well, sometimes for men, their job is their identity.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And they get to where they can't work anymore at that job. That's a big loss.
It is. And it is for, I mean, just kind of taking another I teach a lot of other professionals, mental health professionals, some of these energy psychology techniques particularly. And when I ask people to describe themselves, they will give me a bio that says, you know, I'm a psychotherapist or a clinical social worker or whatever their degree is. And they'll tell me what they do. And then I just throw out there, well, what if that was all taken away? Who would you be then?
Yeah.
And you would be surprised. You would be surprised. I mean, it just floors them because we so identify with what we do, especially in this culture.
Right.
And if that's taken away, that's a loss.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what to do when it's taken away either. Their whole life is undergoing a change.
Yes. Absolutely.
But in my work, we know you're not going in the right direction, and that's why it's trying to steer you in the direction you're supposed to be going in.
Yes.
But it can be very traumatic for people.
Right. And if it's, even though, because I have that myself, you know, the universe said, go here.
Mm-hmm.
But because I didn't choose that consciously, I still, I think I, that's why I still have issues with it, because I've never grieved.
Maybe you do.
I lost everything, yeah, and I never grieved. It's like, even though I know this is what I'm supposed to do, it was just because of how it happened and I lost everything. It
yeah.
was, it's still that issue there. So I'm probably going to have to come see you, Sherry.
But that's what he's saying. You can, sometimes you have to get to the point where you do have to lose everything
right.
in order
yes.
to find yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Take
and
it away.
It, anytime we have an attachment, anytime we have an attachment of any kind, if that bond or connection is broken in any way, a loss can't be avoided. And we, most of us, we resist losing anything we're attached to. Most of us will resist any kind of losing anything that we're attached to, any kind of loss. So that can be, you know, from a relationship to a job, or a house, or, you know, just what we thought we were supposed to be when we grew up.
Yeah.
I know I've had three different. I've said I've had three different lives. I know I have. I didn't plan
yeah,
on going in.
That's what I say. I feel like I've lived many different lifetimes in this one lifetime.
In this one. I understand that. Absolutely.
Hey, so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And when we can see it and we define it as a loss, then we know what to do with it. Because when we're just stuffing it and saying, oh, well, this is what I'm supposed to do, it doesn't resolve the block to that resistance. It doesn't release the block to that resistance. Now, not everybody. I don't want to say this is not an all or nothing issue. Some people can move through it and get through it in a variety of different ways. But most of us will just stuff it. And it'll go into our, whether it's the meridians or the chakras or the biofield or aura of the body, there's
mm-hmm.
going to be a block there.
You end up, with my work, you end up making yourself sick if you're not dealing with whatever it is.
Yes.
But they just say, well, you know, nothing bothers me. I don't have any problem. But the body reacts and they get sick.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. The body will tell you. The body will say, and, you know, that's one of the reasons why I got into this work was doing a lot of the traditional psychotherapy. I didn't realize at the time, this was many years ago, that I was empathic and I was taking on others' energy.
Oh, yeah.
And it became such a burden. I mean, that's how that CD came to be, one of my meditations, Release and Transform Burden. I was carrying the burden of the world and everybody I was seeing, I didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
In my classes, we bring that up a lot because we do have a lot of different healers that have studied mm-hmm. the different modalities take the class. And if they're an empath, they're taking on all their clients' pains and problems.
Yeah.
And that's not good because they carry that around with them and make themselves sick.
Yeah, well, I kind of learned that the hard way.
Uh-huh.
So So, kind of in angst one night, I just said, look, if I'm supposed to be doing this, you're going to have to show me a better, easier, softer way because I can't do this anymore. And I was just kind of taken into an altered state. I'd already learned the hypnotherapy, but I was kind of taken into, I was taken into an altered state, and that script for the meditation that's in the book came through me, and it was a way of releasing everything that I'd been carrying that I had stored in the heart chakra and you know, all of the chakras, all the biofield, all of that I'd just stored. Kept compartmentalizing. I love that word, compartmentalizing. Sooner or later, we run out of compartments.
And yeah, I just got through with a client this last week who was losing her eyesight. And, you know, when we do the sessions, we find out what's causing all this. Mm-hmm. And it was because she was trying to take on all the cares of the world. She just uh-huh. didn't want to see what was happening around her.
Yeah.
You know, in the world, and you know, you can't do that. You can't fix the world. You have to just fix your own world you live in.
And it's so easy to, as a lot of healers, and I tend to work with a lot of healers and doing the workshops for other mental health providers, I see that, and there's an underlying belief that somehow. And I think this comes from some religious beliefs, too, that it's, you've heard it's better to give than receive. Well, somebody's got to be able to receive it.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be reciprocal, but somehow or another that got misquoted or misinterpreted or something. So there's that better to give than receive. And I see this a lot in the healers, and that especially if they don't know they're empathic. Now I do, and I notice. I even tell my clients, you know, I'm going to close my eyes and tune into what I'm getting, and so I can separate out what it is I'm feeling versus what I'm experiencing in an intuitive, empathic sense. But I will teach people how to do that, and loss is one of those things that, especially in I know you said, Julia, you know, being that nurse, setting with people, and I used to work in hospice, and I would set with the dying, and if we take that energy on, it can be very disruptive, and we do literally run out of compartments. It feels like heavy baggage that we're carrying around, and that's one of the other reasons why I got into mm-hmm. this work was there wasn't a whole heck of a lot out there to teach me how to. Even in my hypnotherapy and subtle energy training, there was a point at which I'm sure you do too, both of you, got a lot of tools, but not all tools work in all circumstances.
Right.
So I needed some more tools.
Yeah. But that's what I had to learn in my work is just when the client leaves, just to forget everything we've talked about and just forget everything we've discussed and
release it.
Yeah, otherwise you'll take it with you. So now I don't even remember what we've discussed at the session, and that's the way it should be. Leave it there.
Yes, absolutely. And we think about our ancestors, the indigenous folks. When they do any kind of a healing, they'll burn sage, they'll do a clearing, they'll do something to clean the space. And not take it on, and not leave the residual behind.
It doesn't mean that we don't care about the person. It just means that we've done our part, and then we don't need it on ourselves.
Absolutely.
So that's why you release it then.
Absolutely. And it actually means just the opposite, because if we become entangled by taking on their stuff, then we can't be that objective healer that we are meant to be. Because their energy is now entangled, and we can't be that. We can't resonate at a higher vibration. We can't be in that space that they need us to be in, because we're all entangled, with their energy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I've run into that a lot. I try to give advice, just like you do, but then I don't want to get involved. I just say, well, have you ever thought of this idea or that idea? Because I can't tell you what to do.
Yeah.
But it's just advice.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you don't want to get involved in their life, because they're the one that created this problem. They have to get out of it, and over there is to help them.
Yeah.
Find their answer some way. Are they
and sometimes, yeah, and sometimes it's those very challenges that, and I certainly can speak for myself, that we can choose to grow from or they can define us.
Right.
And unfortunately, people, there's some secondary gains about staying stuck where they're at until they decide they've had enough or they've learned enough or whatever the situation may be.
Yeah, that's what we say. If there's a benefit of any kind there, they'll keep it. And so you
absolutely. I've seen that with people that come in with chronic illness. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. there is a benefit, a secondary benefit from it. It may be that they're on Social Security disability, and they're afraid that if they get well and get better, that they'll lose their livelihood and they won't be able to.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've mm-hmm. had clients like that. Mm-hmm. If I'm healed, I'll lose my disability.
Mm-hmm. It's sad that, you know, our culture doesn't support the healing and recovery part. You either are disabled or you're not. There's no transition, and that's not real. That's not real life. That's not, I mean, I don't need to tell anybody that, but there is going to be a transition period, but unfortunately, our culture doesn't support the transition into healing and recovery in a lot of different areas, our medical areas in particular.
Yeah, I've had clients that if they are benefiting from the illness, they're very hard to treat.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had one who, he said, if I get well, my wife will leave me. She's only staying with me just to take care of me.
Yep.
See, you know, it wasn't true, but that was what he believed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really work to try to change that kind of a mindset. But they're
Absolutely.
Not going to get well as long as they're getting a benefit out of it.
Yeah. And that is something that I would say that falls under anticipatory loss or anticipatory grief. And that is one of the most challenging types of grief to address because there is a fear of an outcome. And as we all know, I mean, it's hard enough to manage what's going on present time. But if we perceive that something... Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
If we perceive something out in the future, that there's no sense of control or ability to manage it. So anticipatory grief and loss is one of the more challenging, because for him, he anticipated his wife, leaving him and his life completely changing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
If you take it away, they don't have anything.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's their perception.
Right. They think they don't.
They think they don't. Yeah, that's one of the ones that are the hardest ones to treat. I found.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're on the same page. We're just doing the same work, just going different directions.
Oh, sure. Different tools. And I've done hypnotherapy for years, and I started doing energy psychology just to augment the... when people would go into a traumatic space, oftentimes it could re-traumatize them. And you know, avoiding and managing that shock, most people don't want to go through that again, which I can understand why. So when I started doing energy psychology along with the hypnotherapy, I found that it helped dissipate that, and people felt more... what can I say? There was less what I would call an abreaction or reaction to whatever material they needed to see. They could see it in a less threatening way when I incorporated the energy psychology. And grief is one of those, you know, we all try to avoid it. Again, it's, you know, we're going to try to resist anything that we experience as a loss of attachment of something that we care about.
But, you know, that's life.
Oh, absolutely.
We've all had things, you know, bad things happen to us.
Absolutely.
I always ask the client, well, did you learn anything from it?
Yeah. It's like most anything, you know, people will look at the, I don't even like to use this term, but for trying to describe what I'm talking about, the negative emotions, people will define them, anger, loss, grief, loneliness, sadness, those as negative. In other words, most of us don't wake up every day and say, you know, I want to be sad today. It's a we want to resist it. And yet each emotion we have has information in there for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a guidance. It's a map, if you will, that will lead us to something that will bring us joy, for example, if we listen to it.
And we probably
but most
learn
of
more.
Us resist that. I'm sorry.
And
go
I think
ahead.
We learn more from those emotions. But and that may be part of why we're afraid to go there, because there's a deep well there.
But if they do accept it, then their life is going to change, and some of them are so afraid
to
change.
Yeah, but you've got to go through those emotions to get there, and those emotions are scary.
Yeah. And they're afraid of change.
Yeah.
They want to stick with what they know, even if it is the worst. At least they know that. But
Yeah, it's interesting how the familiar is less scary, if you will, than the unfamiliar.
That old saying, stay with the devil you know rather than go with the angel you don't know.
So, I was thinking the same thing when you said that. You read my mind.
Absolutely. And you know, I know that most of us will... we experience the anger, the loss, the sadness, the depression, all of those emotions really in a heavy sense. I mean, if you think about the emotions and does it feel heavy, does it feel light, most of those are vibrating in a really low level.
Right.
And that's what I have found that some of the energy psychology and energy medicine techniques will help is bring that up. As well as hypnotherapy, it'll help bring it up, and like you said, Dolores, go through it, and then, you know, it's less threatening, if you will. One of the things I like about the energy psychology and some of the modalities that are in my book is you don't have to go. Now, I want to put a disclaimer out there. Some of these techniques you can do on your own, and have no negative ab reaction whatsoever. Some of them may, you know, assist you in recognizing what it is you need to go seek a healthcare professional for, mental health care professional for in particular. But these techniques you can do, and that's why I utilized them, because I couldn't find anything that I could do or I could recommend my clients do or my sister or my family or anybody that they could do on their own when the emotions come up, and hence the name Peaks and Valleys. I mean, we may be going along, and it seems like we're just, you know, moving okay, and we're not really experienced. We're just kind of in neutral, and then all of a sudden a song will come on, or we'll see something that triggers us, and we usually can't get in that very moment in to see our mental health care professional. So we have to have some tools to... I think it's recommended to have some tools that we can use right then when that emotion comes up. That's the best case scenario. It's not always, but it's a possible solution to some of the things that come up when we go through those peaks and valleys of the experience of particularly loss. Most people will say, you know, I seen something that reminded me. This gentleman who lost his wife, she loved riding motorcycles, and she died of cancer, and he was driving along, and he noticed the same type of sickle she had and a woman driving with the same type of outfit on, and it triggered him all over again.
Of course.
So he had to pull off and do some work. So that's what I love about
those
some
what
of
these
tools.
I call those trigger points. You know, they're things that trigger something inside of you.
Yes, absolutely.
You have no control over them.
Yeah, no, not it. And what I would say is, but if you have a tool that you feel like you don't become so overwhelmed that it incapacitates you, like some of the tapping techniques that I've got in the book and some of the other techniques, then you're, it can become less frightening because you don't feel so vulnerable.
Do you find it's harder on the person when their person, like you said, they're grieving for a loved one, that the loved one has died a slow death or if it's sudden?
Well, it's different, Dolores. When, in my experience is, and I've certainly seen this with my sister, when people are dying of a slow death, like a death of a cancer or some chronic illness like Alzheimer's or something like that, what happens is the caregiver will have many incidences of feeling they cannot help or stop what's happening to their loved one. And so the definition of trauma is when you feel yourself or a loved one is in, their life is threatened in some way, and you can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And so when I see people witnessing the death of a loved one, now it depends on the person, it depends on the situation, but they're witnessing day in and day out the suffering that is occurring, their suffering as well as the patient's suffering, it becomes very traumatic. And they have to stuff it because they're taking care of them. They, you know, they have to be fully present. They have to do the catheterizing, the, you know, the, and Julie, I know with you being a nurse, I mean, the day-in, day-out hygiene of someone that's bedridden, all the nursing stuff, especially when a patient's in hospice, home hospice, they're responsible for taking care of them in at some level. So it becomes very traumatic. So when they die, oftentimes there's a sense of relief.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're relieved that the person died. It's the relief that the suffering is over, theirs as well as their loved one. And then there's some subsequent guilt because they feel
exactly.
relieved.
Mm-hmm. Why am I feeling relieved when
yeah.
they just died?
Yeah, yeah. So it's, in that case, and it does depend on the person, but in that case, we have to work at a couple of different what we call aspects of it. We have to work on the guilt. We have to work on the trauma that was endured, where they compartmentalized because they had to go on, they had to move forward. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't know these techniques. If they could do the techniques while they're going through the suffering piece of it, we could actually eliminate some of the trauma that is incurred. But oftentimes, you know, they don't know these techniques, so that's not it's not something that they can practice always. So it makes
it
different.
Do you want to discuss some of the techniques in your book? Do you want to talk about some of them?
Yeah, sure. The one that I'm referring to the most here when I refer to energy psychology, because there's several different modalities, but the one that I put in my book is something called emotional freedom technique. And the reason why I did that is that's the most user-friendly, most probably widely known type of energy psychology technique. And it's something that you don't need necessarily another professional to assist you with. Now, I say that, again, with a disclaimer, is when there's a lot of trauma involved, I would highly recommend going to someone that specializes in that, because they can kind of support you in a way that you may not be able to do on your own. But the emotional freedom technique, and primarily most energy psychology techniques, are based upon stimulating acupoints. Acupoints are on the meridians, and the meridians are, now they've actually got some research showing that they do exist, even though we've known it for 5,000 years. It took a little while for the research to be able to show that. But there are acupoints on specific meridians that are involved with certain emotions. They've found that they're correlated with certain emotions. So the emotional freedom technique works with tapping or stimulating, and it's not, you don't put needles in like acupuncture, but you are using the acupoints that are on that on those meridians. And you'll tap on the negative feeling. Now, what's a little different about this technique is you actually, when we were talking about this early, you actually recognize the negative emotion. So instead of compartmentalizing it and brushing it aside and acting as if it doesn't exist, if you're feeling afraid, then you would tap, you would make a statement, something like, even though I'm afraid, I deeply and completely accept this part of me. A lot of people have difficulty accepting the part of them that's struggling with whatever emotion. Now, I use the term part. The traditional emotional freedom technique just stated, even though I'm afraid, I accept this part of me. I accept this fear. I put part of me in there, and I found that it works better for most of my clients because there is a part of them that isn't afraid, or they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be working. They wouldn't be carrying on. They wouldn't be functioning. So sure. I like to point that out. So as they tap on these acupoints, what happens is, and they address the negative emotion, what happens is there's an acceptance, kind of like a reset button that happens. There's an acceptance, and it actually discharges that most of the negative emotions are associated in some way with fight, flight, and freeze. Freeze being the major issue here. We freeze our emotions within, and they're blocked. So if you gently tap on these points, state the emotion that you're struggling with, then that tells your brain and your body, you can deactivate, you can release, you can let go. And then we'll put in a positive affirmation after we go through a couple rounds of that. So with the loss piece of it, oftentimes we'll go through several different aspects. So it may be the major loss, then maybe the secondary loss, and so on and so on. So we're pulling the layers of the onion away by the tapping. And it will reset the meridians in the body. It sends the signals to the amygdala in the brain that you can relax now. I'm not in any harm. I'm not being threatened. The hippocampus part of the brain, which is the brain that tells time and space, says, you know, this isn't happening now. A lot of times we'll hear from people that have gone through trauma, and I see this with the people who have lost loved ones. They relive over and over again. Maybe the last 2 weeks, maybe the last 2 hours, and they may have been together for 30 or 40 years, but all they can remember is those last few weeks replaying and flashbacks over and over again. So when they do that tapping, they can get beyond and they can re-remember, if you will, the memories that of their loved one that existed before that block of the trauma interfered with that ability. So it's some pretty
It may take them a while to start remembering the other things that happened earlier in the life, you know.
Yeah. It's just a way of clearing a pathway, if you will, that allows for reprocessing in a healthier way. Because we all know when we're under stress or sometimes when we're angry, we say things we don't mean. Our perception of reality is skewed in some way, and we can go back in, just like hypnotherapy, and have a corrective experience of it. So I don't know if that makes sense. It's really not as difficult as it sounds, and the way that I have it in the book is a step-by-step procedure, the points. I have some scripts in there that people can use, utilizing from anything from divine homesickness to the loss of a loved one to the loss of a job. There's several different scripts in there. It's always better to use your own words because you want it to have meaning to you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You want your triggers there. But sometimes people need it. Go ahead.
I like what you said, Sherry, when you said about, you talked about that part of me has this or is experiencing this. And while that may sound strange to me, it's like it allows you to get to an objective place.
Yeah.
Which then you can do more healing. Because as long as you're directly associated with it, and then there you're tangled up in your own stuff. So it's almost like you become, see, that's how you become your own healer. Just
yes.
as if, like, you to someone else, if you're able to work more efficiently and more effectively with yourself by being objective.
Yes, absolutely.
Too
it's
personal.
Just like when, and I don't know how you do hypnosis exactly, Dolores, but it's like when I have people in an altered state, then they may be the observer of something so that it doesn't feel as threatening. So that's part of them, the higher self, or part of them is witnessing whatever it is they need to see to learn from.
Right, yeah. It does that. That's, yeah, it takes it to that other place where it's a third party.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
what we do.
Right.
It talks about them and tells
right.
them what's going on. That
yeah.
way they're not directly involved.
Mm-hmm.
But they can see it more objectively.
Right.
Then.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing you had here, the different stages of grief, these are different than the ones we've normally heard of. But we have the five stages of grief.
Oh, and I couldn't tell you what. I know one's denial, and then there's bargaining, acceptance. I know that's three of them. I don't remember all the steps, though. So.
But
yeah,
you have them just differently in your book here. But it's the
I
same
do.
Thing, really.
Well, it can overlap. But what I have found is when I work with death and people that were dying, excuse me, they were actually, and this stage came from Kubler-Ross, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross,
uh-huh.
when
right.
she was working with the terminally ill, and she noticed people were in the stage one, denial, and then they would, stage two, anger, and then the three would be bargaining, you know, can I live until I see my daughter get married or my son graduate or something like that. They would go into this bargaining space, and then there would be a sense of depression, that kind of knowing that they're leaving their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be a sense of acceptance. And I see that in the cancer patients that I work with. They, in fact, I could see, now, not all of them, but most of them would go through these stages. If they were, of course, if they were in the support group, they were open to recovering and healing anyway. And what I mean by that is healing doesn't necessarily mean healing from their cancer, but healing from the emotional components and stress and trauma that
mm-hmm.
is endured with people that are dying, excuse me. So they would go through these stages. But when I worked with the bereavement group, and I did bereavement training, certification, and all of that, it never made sense to me. It never made sense because a lot of them would come in and say, you know, it's been 6 months, and I just can't get out of the depression stage, and when am I going to get into this acceptance, and when am I going to be over this, and all of that. And as I started doing some of my, I guess, case management research, case studies, excuse me, and research on that, and my own experience, what I realized was this isn't really indicative of what a person goes through when they've incurred a loss, such as the death of a loved one or any kind of losses we've talked about before. And I found and modified this grief cycle, and that made sense to me because that felt like it was applicable to every type of loss. So there's always a shock. And I look at this as a cycle, not a stage, but shock is the first phase of this cycle. So we all get into this. There's a sense of disbelief. Oftentimes people will report feeling numb. There's just a real sense of shock, kind of walking on automatic place when you're in this first phase of shock. And then the second phase is protest. And this is where you'll get that anger, the why me, why them, why now, and so forth. You'll find that. And people are trying to find meaning out of what it is they've lost. They're trying to find some sense of, you know, they feel out of control, and they're trying to find some sense of control back or power back in whatever loss that was incurred, endured. And then they'll go into what's called a disorganization phase, and that's when you're looking at every coping skill that you may have may come into question. Your roles are questioned. You may not if you've lost a loved one, for example, if you've lost a wife, then does that mean you're no longer a husband and you still feel like a husband because, you know, you haven't had that re-identification happen? And if you've lost a job, you know, you're not going into that. If you had a 9-to-5 job, your routine's disintegrated. And all those things happen within this disorganization phase. And then there's this what's called the reorganization phase. And that's when you're really starting to move forward in this cycle and you're noticing that you're developing new habits and routines and maybe even a sense of self again, apart from that, you know, which you've lost. And you're in that recovery phase. And really the recovery phase, which is the last phase, but I've put it in the middle because anytime you're moving through any of those phases, whether it's the shock or the protest or the disorganization or reorganization phase, movement implies recovery. It's right. When you get stuck that, you know, then you may need some assistance. And really what recovery means, and this really I want to reiterate here, when you lose a loved one, you don't get over it. You may learn to live with it and in spite of it, and move forward, but you don't get over it. And that is probably one of the least helpful things to say to someone is, you need to get over this.
Right.
That's just not
right.
helpful. That's no. like trying to tell a person they shouldn't feel a certain way. And if you've ever been told you shouldn't feel a certain way, you know how helpful that is.
Right.
Yeah, then you feel not. Guilty because you're feeling like that.
Yeah.
And it's, you cannot not feel what you're feeling. It's not helpful.
Right.
So that recovery phase. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But Sherry's book is called Peaks and Valleys. And it has all these exercises are in the book, and it's a good way to for people to read and go through these things.
Well, and I think it's important for people to know it's not just for losing loved ones, like you said at the beginning of the show. I mean, all of us have loss that we're grieving over, and we probably don't even realize it.
Yeah.
So
that it's all part of life that we have to go through. You can't just skate through life. It doesn't happen that way. You don't learn anything.
Yes.
But Sherry, tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to contact you.
My website is mindbodyspirit-inner, Grations, and that's GRATIONS.com.
That's a long
mine. I know. I didn't think about it. I didn't think it through when I created my business name. I wanted to incorporate it, that it was mind, body, spirit, integrations, integrating inner instead of inner. I know. You know, so when I did that, and I've had that name out there so long, I thought, oh, God, I've got to say this is my website. Or, you know what, you could just Google me, and it'll pop up.
Right.
And that's Sherry is Sherry, and then it's Briae.
But if they want to get a hold of you, they can email you at that one.
Yes, that website has a contact. You can fill out information in order for me to contact you.
I believe on the Ozark Mountain website, we have a link over to your website as well.
Yes, you do. Yeah, and I'm also listed in Psychology Today. So if you have if you can't get those two links, then you go to Psychology Today and put my name in, you'll get a link. Excuse me?
Okay, and the book is out now.
Yes.
And you should be able to get it at the stores or order it anyway.
Order it from us, Amazon. I think it's probably just starting to hit
the stores.
The stores, yeah.
Because it just came off press. But our website is ozarkmt.com, and we have all the books listed there. And I want to remind everyone that the Transformation Conference is coming up in 2 weeks, and it's here in Arkansas, in Springdale, at the Holiday Inn Convention Center, our 9th one. And we're going to have some really good speakers.
Yeah, Sherry's going to be one of the speakers, and If you want to come and meet her personally, come on down.
Yeah, and I'll be doing a post-workshop, too, so
that's
we'll,
right.
we'll really get into the experience of these exercises.
Uh-huh. So you're going to do a workshop then?
And that'll be on the Monday. Is that right, Monday?
Yeah,
after
Monday,
the,
and we'll be doing the exercises.
Fantastic.
Okay, well, good. Well, then we're going to see you in just a few weeks, and I hope those that are listening will want to come because it's going to be a good conference. Uh-huh. We're bringing Robert Vival from Spain, one of the ancient aliens. Okay, so we're going to have to sign off now.
Thank you so much, Sherry, for being with us.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening in tonight. Good night, everybody.